Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Yucca.
And I'm Mark.
And this episode, we're talking about self-care. So we actually wanted to start out with the question of, well, how are you doing? So how are you doing, Mark?
Well, that's actually a really big question. And I'll try to make my answer as succinct as I can. I work in an essential industry for a food bank. And so I have been going to work 5 days a week. And so I do see people other than Nemea, my partner, at work. And of course we wear masks and do social distancing and have meetings over Zoom and, you know, all those sorts of things. But still I am seeing people a little bit. There have been gigantic fires in my area again for the third year in a row. In 2017, the Tubbs fire burned within a half block of my house. And so when there's fire, it makes me really nervous. Last fall, we were evacuated twice in one night. We evacuated to a friend's house and then their house got evacuated. So, it's all pretty intense. So having that constant oppressive presence of smoke in the air, plus the constant oppressive presence of the COVID virus, plus the constant oppressive presence of Donald Trump, it's stacking emergencies in a way that's putting me under a lot of strain. And so what I am having to do is a lot of self-care. And I don't know that I'm nearly as good at it as I should be, but I'm fortunate in that when I'm confronted with crisis situations, my usual response is to get very calm and very methodical. I know other people whose minds go blank or who, you know, get really hysterical or, and that there's nothing wrong with any of those responses. They're all kind of natural crisis responses that come out of the amygdala. But my particular orientation tends to be to slow up and go step by step with the stuff that I have control over and then just kind of shine on the stuff that I have no control over. The next few months I think are going to be really hard. We're only at the very beginning of fire season in California, and there are going to be more fires. So, yeah. We'll see where they are and whether they impact me and my community directly. So there's that, there's the election, there's the ongoing presence of the virus.
And just to pause you real quick, a lot of our listeners are listening to this when this comes out, but if anyone's listening in the future, we're right at the end of August of 2020. So just a context of where we're at. So,
Yes, exactly. So thank you for introducing that.
I'm sorry, though, you were saying the next few months.
The next few months are going to be really intense. They're going to be intense at a national level. We're still seeing the deaths and the cases mount of the coronavirus. And then there's that fire season that I know is coming here. It's already done its thing once, and I'm pretty sure it burned a friend of mine's house down. He's not entirely
clear, but
he doesn't know yet. And it's been more than a week. There is a webcam that's still operating in his neighborhood, so it's possible that his house survived. So That's really kind of where I am. And what I'm finding is that what is feeding me is participation in the online Ethiopagan community. We have a Saturday mixer over Zoom that we do every Saturday morning. And I'm really enjoying that and the people that attend. I'm working on some more resource pieces for non-theist pagans. Got some great feedback at the mixer last Saturday of people still being kind of mystified about how to start when it comes to rituals. So I'm working on a step-by-step workbook where people can actually, you know, sort of storyboard their ritual, starting from themes and concepts and emotions and desired atmosphere, and then sort of melding that together in a structure. So yeah, being able to create in a way that gives to a community really feeds me. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for ways to do that right now. How about you, Yucca? How are you doing?
Yeah. Well, again, that's not the easiest answer to give. So often when we ask, how are you, we're not actually asking. And so it's take a moment and step back and look at it. And it's an interesting time period for me and the rest of the world. But I have, on the one hand, the crises that you've been talking about, a lot of those are shared in terms of what's going on the global and national scale. We also have fires in my region right now, although they don't seem to be threatening as many populated areas, but there is a lot of smoke, and the smoke is really oppressive. The fire is only about 3-4 miles from here, but I am from the Southwest and lived through a lot of pretty scary fires. So that always has pretty intense for the whole community. There's a lot of intense emotions around it, and there's a lot of loss that's happened from fires. So I really, really feel for what you're going through and what your community is going through. It's something we really relate to. But with the crisis, this period actually is harder for me, I think, than in the beginning. Because personality-wise, I'm very, when crises happen, I'm the organizer. I'm the get up. I'm the take care of. You know, I used to be an EMT. Like a crisis in the moment, I know how to deal with and to get what has to happen done. But this is dragging on and on and on. And it's easy to ignore some of the self-care when you're still in the adrenaline mode. And even if that's the adrenaline of a crisis, it's the metaphorical adrenaline. But now we're in a period of, this is just exhausting. And knowing that, like you're saying, that we're not done with it. It's not over yet. And also looking at going, the future is so uncertain right now. You know, I believe that I will keep working through it, and that my family is very, you know, we're very mindful and thrifty and we'll work through. But what it is, that uncertainty, that limbo, we're not built for that, for ongoing crisis. We're built to run away from the tiger and then we're good, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a stressful period. So I have that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, there's a lot going on in my life that is just fantastic and incredible and wonderful. I have children who are blooming into personhood, who are really becoming, my youngest is starting to talk, and my oldest is entering into a world of imagination and play and having her own opinions and stories, and that's incredible. And sharing that and meeting them as people. And there's been some really positive things with the online communication that's been happening. I've been running some fantastic games. I just finished this morning with the culmination of a game that we've been playing, that this was the 8th session and the 8th campaign, mini campaign. So a session a week, but 8 different months where the characters have been jumping around and I got to tie together the stories and just like blow the players' minds. And so there's all this positive stuff happening too. So it's a really, I feel conflicted about that. There's a part of me that feels guilty, right? That I'm having all of this positive, great experience. Well, there's all of this intense things going on. And then of course I step back and go, you shouldn't feel guilty about that. Come on. That's just this weird leftover, like Catholicism coming in through and like Irish and Welsh culture, like telling you that through your grandmother's voices. But, and I'm sure lots of other cultures have that guilt as well. But so it's an interesting time period.
Indeed, it certainly is. You know, one of the things that you talk about is how we're accustomed to this sort of all hands on deck emergency response. And then there's this flush, the epinephrine is metabolized and we kind of shake it off and then we're good again. And you can see many other animals doing the same thing. But this long stretch where there's this constant sort of pressure, what I find it does is it reduces my elasticity. It makes me more reactive when yet another thing gets piled on. Mm-hmm. I had an experience recently where $750 were pulled out of my bank account by a company that makes CPAP supplies, saying that when they talked to my insurance company, they had no record that I was insured. Now, they didn't even notify me that they were doing this. They just pulled this money out of my bank account. And I am insured. And it turns out the insurance company had actually paid them. Mm. So now I get to wait some number of weeks before this all gets ironed out. And that's real money to me. That makes a lot of difference. And when I saw that, part of me just went into this whole kind of, you know, survival panic, which ordinarily I just would have gone, well, you know, here comes bureaucracy again. I'm going to have to make some phone calls and I'll iron it out. And I did. But my equanimity during that was really tested.
Yeah. 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 Our tolerance is greatly impacted by everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And there's so much that's out of our control. And that part really is the part I think that we are just so not built for. Mm-hmm. You know, long-term oppressive danger. About which we have very little to say. It's just there. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll get you and maybe it won't. We're not, I mean, humans have lived with pandemics for as long as there have been humans, for sure. But,
or at least as long as we've been in larger groups.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But that doesn't mean that evolutionarily we're really very accustomed to how to, you know, just pull your pants on every morning and keep marching, even though people are dropping like flies all around you.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing how you're doing and you know,
likewise.
My heart goes out to everyone who I know is, especially, you know, kind-hearted people they're having a hard time right now because there's so much suffering being both stirred up and caused and also revealed through incidences like the death of George Floyd.
And another group I want to just mention is the young folks right now, right? The kids, it breaks my heart every time we drive past, we have a children's museum I used to take my kid to, and she goes, mommy, I want the sickness to be done, right? Heartbreaking for her, but then the teenagers and the people who are just coming of age now, like, I thought I had it hard with coming of age in the Great Recession, but this is a world, this is a time period for them that whoa.
Yes. You know. Yes, it's so hard, especially when at their developmental stage, what they're supposed to be doing is learning how to socialize.
Oh, yeah.
Learning how to function in groups, right? And they're not being allowed to be in groups. So,
or do any of those cultural rites of passages that we, the few that we have left, the going off to college and do, you know.
Yes.
Just that stuff. Getting a job as a teenager, like, nuh-uh. You know, yeah. Not that the job market really allowed for that anyways, but like now any possibility of that is just not there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not easy out there, folks, and I know that we're not telling you anything that you don't already know. So that's why we want to talk today about self-care. This is not the time for deferred maintenance. And you may be unaware of the degree to which all these stressors are affecting you. I mean, I know that men particularly are often really unaware of what their emotional state is. They're taught to be sort of blind emotionally and not to be as introspective as they should be. And that can make for really, you know, dangerous situations to their health and even to other people around them, because the stress rises and rises and rises and rises. And then when it finally blows, there aren't very many socially acceptable ways for them to vent that pressure. And unfortunately, in this society, if you're a man, one of the socially acceptable ways to vent pressure is to be violent.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very challenging time. And I really, really encourage each of us to be paying extra attention to what we can do just to help ourselves feel better. I'm reminded... somebody made a joke about having gained the COVID-19, meaning 19 pounds.
Oh.
This is not the time for going on a diet necessarily. This is not the time for withholding your pleasures from yourself for some greater good that you might perceive it serving. If it helps you feel better and more healthy, then that's great.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I think it depends on what one means by going on a diet, right? If it is the depriving oneself, but there are things that can certainly make folks feel that is self-care that's diet related.
Yes.
You know, doing a Whole 30 or something like that, that could actually be part of the helping yourself feel better in the long run.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yes.
But your point is well taken about not making it not adding extra stressors to what is already there.
I'm suddenly reminded of a scene from the movie Airplane. I don't know if you've ever seen Airplane. It's this very broad sort of farce movie about an airplane that may be going to crash, and there's this air traffic controller played by Lloyd Bridges, and at some point he says, "Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking," and he
smokes
his cigarette. But then it gets worse and worse. "Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue."
Yeah, so maybe that's a self-care, folks. Pick out your feet. An airplane's a great one. There's some things that haven't aged well with it, but there's some pretty great, great moments in that. Just pull out your favorite comedy and make a point of it.
Laughter is medicine. It definitely is. I'm particularly fond of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Steve Martin and Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm.
Recommend that if you haven't seen it. What else? There's a movie called The House Sitter with Steve Martin that's also, and Goldie Hawn. Very, very, very funny. Mm-hmm. I don't tend to gravitate towards comedies myself. And so there are whole generations of comedies that I have never seen or experienced, but some of them from my past, they really stick with me.
Yeah, well, we've just started a little bit on going into techniques, but why don't we step back and think about sort of some of the broad ideas around the self-care? Because we were talking about how there's kind of two different categories, although they overlap quite a bit, but that the physical side of it, but then also some of the more spiritual, if we want to use that word, or emotional and mental side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, as we were talking before starting to record, this is a pagan podcast. And so when we talk about self-care, we're not going to necessarily just talk about brushing your teeth and getting 8 hours of sleep.
Although that's
brushing
very much
your
connected.
Teeth and getting 8 hours of sleep are very, very important things.
Yeah. Or more.
Yes, or more if you can.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm hearing from lots of people is how their sleep is disturbed.
Yeah.
A whole lot of people are having sleep disturbance right now, including myself.
And so, society is already deeply sleep deprived.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
But not just getting your sleep and brushing your teeth, but also taking care of your internal dialogue too.
Yes, your inner self, your emotional, mental, spiritual, your understanding of who you are and your relationship with the world. And that's where the pagan piece comes in, and where I think that the ritual toolkit that we talked about in a previous episode becomes really valuable for us in terms of working with the stress that we have. And that can take a lot of different forms. I had a therapist once who would go to flea markets and yard sales and things like that to buy terracotta pottery so she could break it. And she would just go out on her back porch and fling terracotta pots at the ground when she was really, really upset. And
that sounds so satisfying.
Doesn't it sound sad? I mean, the sound of the breaking and the shatter and things.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds really wonderful. And I just thought that was a brilliant ritual for stress and distress. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that we, as people who deliberately tinker with our inner selves and our psychology, can do in order to help ourselves. So why don't we talk about the fundamental sort of physical pieces first, and then we can go into talking about the more, you know, ritual, emotional kinds of pieces.
Okay, yeah. Well, the first thing that comes up for me is grounding. I don't know if this is a major element in your practice or not,
mm-hmm.
but for me, the grounding is really, really key, especially in moments that can be charged. And that doesn't just have to be a conflict with someone, but a thought that comes up, or walking around and realizing that your jaws are clenched and you're shoulders are, yeah, you're just positioned, that you're holding all that stress, to stop for a moment and breathe it out and reconnect. And that's it's a practice. So it's something that if you practice a lot, you can get to the place where you can do it very quickly. But when you're first starting out with developing it, it might take some time. You might have to stop and spend 5 or 10 minutes breathing and really grounding. And then over time, you can maybe get there faster and maybe use a trigger. I think last time we were talking a little bit about triggers or keys mm-hmm. that one can take with you. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's just such a valuable skill is to ground and to practice that grounding. Because it's not going to help you unless you practice it over and over.
Yes, because the times when you'll really need it are the times when it is going to be hardest to find. So the more you practice, the more you're able to go, okay, you know, I really, really want to slap this person, but that's not what I do. So instead, I'm going to take these breaths and I'm going to look at the sky and I'm going to remember where I am and I'm going to feel my feet on the ground. And then by all the time that has passed, then I will no longer be in this state of wanting to slap this person.
Not that having strong emotions is somehow a bad thing or an undesirable thing, but the grounding allows you to have some choice in your response to that.
Exactly. Exactly so. I mean, people are entitled to their emotions. And one of the things that I think is most pernicious in our mainstream society is large swaths of the kind of alternative sort of new age and even pagan society is when people say, oh, well, no one should hate. There should be no hate. Well, the truth is people will feel hate and tamping it down will just distill it. It'll just make it stronger and stronger and stronger. It's a whole lot better to sit with the hate and try to understand why you feel it and then dissolve it so that you no longer feel it. Mm-hmm. Then to deny that it's so, or to tell yourself, oh, well, I'm not a hater, so I'm not having this feeling. That gets you into a terrible tail chase around who you are and what you really feel. And you can end up gaslighting yourself a lot.
Mm-hmm. And that gaslighting is something that we did mention before that we wanted to come back to as part of the possible pitfalls surrounding the what's going on now and some of the ways in which we can approach self-care and trying to help ourselves out.
The key piece is to start with some very frank diagnosis, you know, a very frank inventory of how you're feeling, you know, and that can extend as far as having a sheet of paper and, you know, writing out political situation, COVID situation, fires situation, whatever all the situations are, and rating them in stress levels from 1 to 10 so that you really have kind of a map of where the stressors are in your life and where you most need to apply some self-care in order to try to get those numbers down.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in dealing with depression and anxiety, I've, you know, done workshops and clinics and things like that, where these are very standard sort of therapeutic tools for people to do these assessments before, sort of before and after various processes like cognitive behavioral therapy or whatever that is. You need to look at yourself with kind of an unvarnished eye and really take stock. How am I doing? How am I relating with other people that I care about? How's my work life going? How's my sex life going? How's my diet? How am I sleeping? You know, am I getting any exercise? All those kinds of things. And then at least you know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make decisions about what you want to do some work on.
Yeah. And how you think it would actually be effective to address those particular ones.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that you... Because sometimes, at least for me, I find there's certain solutions that I like better than other solutions. but they're not always, they don't always work. They're not the right ones. It might be more fun to do a N-word journey and all of that, but it might just be that I really do need to get out and get some more sun and actually get off my ass and exercise a little bit. That might be the real solution to what I'm dealing with.
Uh-huh.
But it would be way more fun to listen to the drumming and go on my little adventure.
Yeah.
So an honesty with ourselves is, I guess, is what I'm getting at there.
Yes. Which is a good habit to get into as well. And something else that is also a part of a practice, I think. You know, the work that is placed before us is to be ourselves to as great a degree as possible. And that means we need to know who that is. And then to try to be happy and kind and to help make the world a better place. So while self-deception may be a lot more comfortable in some cases, it never lasts. The same things that you think you're escaping from will keep coming up again and again and again. So you might as well just bite the bullet, acknowledge that it's there, and then do some work around it.
Mm. So we said grounding.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any types of practices or suggestions that people can experiment with?
Well, to me, I think getting out into nature is really important right now. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to mean exercise or a hike or any of that kind of stuff. It can just mean sitting on a park bench and watching trees and listening to birds. It can be any of a wide range of things, but just getting reacquainted with the fact that the whole world is not mediated through screens. Mm-hmm. And that that we are part of a larger unfolding system which continues to function even as we go through these challenges can help us to put our challenges in context. And also just, you know, there's this whole physiological thing that happens when people get out into nature. Their blood pressure drops and their endorphins come up. There are smells that come up from the smell of living earth that are beneficial for depression and anxiety. They just, you know, they really drop your cortisol levels. And this is science. This stuff is all well documented now. It's not woo-woo. It's real stuff that nature can do for you.
Yeah.
So I really think that any opportunity you have to sit in a garden or any of that.
Simply be outside.
Yes.
Because even if you just take the light level, if you ever play with a lux meter, go inside and see what it is, and then walk outside, and we're talking an order of magnitude difference in the light. Now, our brains are really good at making it not seem that different to us. We can adjust so quickly, so inside doesn't seem dark. But when you actually measure what's going on, it's so different.
Sure. Well, we wander around underneath the gaze of that star that is so bright that we can't even look at it without blinding ourselves.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, that's kind of an amazing thing that all of life on Earth goes around with its eyes downcast because it can't possibly bear the brilliance of the gigantic fusion reaction that's taking place not very far away.
Well, and that we have hundreds of millions of years of evolution depending on our connection with that. We may not be photosynthesizing, but our bodies still need that.
Yes.
And when we don't get it, it has all of those things you were talking about with the blood pressure and the endorphin, that we're seeing that as a result.
Yes, and that's one reason why it becomes really hard when being outside becomes a stressor, like with the smoke.
Oh, yeah.
Because the problem with the smoke for me is there's the health impact. And I don't, to be honestly, I don't worry about that much. I mean, I'm wearing a mask anyway. And, you know, people manage to like smoke cigarettes for years and not get sick. Some of them. So,
well, seriously sick.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
it depends on that. Yeah,
is what I mean. But it's the stories that the smoke tells. The smoke tells the story of my friend's house being burned and of, you know, all these people being displaced and evacuated because of this gigantic fire. It's laden with meaning.
Mm-hmm. And it's so inescapable.
And it's everywhere. It
because
permeates.
You can tape up the cracks on your window, but it still comes in.
It does. Yeah, so it's like this sort of oozing evil that comes in and just sort of oppresses your sensorium. But it's not forever. Mm-hmm. And that actually is, I'll tell our listeners right now, you heard it first from Mark Green. Those are magic words. It is not forever are very magic words. And they help with your brain a lot if you tell yourself that something is not forever.
I referenced my beloved grandmother earlier. She mm-hmm. loved to say, "This too shall pass."
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, of course, there was Dorothy Parker, who would answer the telephone saying, "What fresh hell is this?"
Both comforting and distressing.
Yeah, well, Dorothy Parker was a very witty and sarcastic person. the things that we can do, and especially when you're in a circumstance where there is nowhere that really feels like a safe haven because of like omnipresent smoke or the presence of the virus or any of those things, is you can go on an inward journey like those that we described in an earlier episode. Mm-hmm. You can take yourself to a fountain of health that you can drink from that will protect you from those things. And that doesn't mean that you can now be stupid and go out and not wear a mask and, you know, hug everybody.
Mm-hmm. Share bottles and whatever. Yeah.
Yes. But it means that you can lower the level of stress that's associated with all of that. This is how we're living now. So I'm just doing this, but I'm not constantly hyper-vigilantly looking at every possible vector that could possibly be bringing me a virus particle, because that way lies madness. Mm-hmm. Viruses are very small and they travel very easily. So, you know, the idea that you're going to protect yourself from any possible exposure from a virus basically means you need to live in a blown glass clean room. And that's not what we do.
Well, and then we know that that's actually not very good for us either.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you mentioned something I think is really, really key is this isn't an all or nothing when it comes to things like self-care or when it comes to, you know, virus exposure or anything like that, where right now it's probably pretty unlikely that you're going to be able to fix everything with a capital F. But what you do is going to make a difference. It's mm-hmm. going to make a difference for your overall well-being, your overall experience of the world. And frankly, if the being exposed to a virus is a major concern, also your health and ability to withstand and fight the virus if you do get it, right? The
yes.
better state that you are in emotionally and health-wise, and those two are so intertwined that it's difficult to tell when which is which, you know, the better you're going to be able to do.
That's so. Well said. Yes, that's absolutely true. The primary indicator of threats to health are stress. measurable stress, particularly cortisol, but other stress hormones as well. When we talk about the social determinants of health, which have to do with things like food insecurity, housing insecurity, poverty, all those kinds of factors, the reason that those are social determinants of health is because they are all incredibly stressful. If you don't know where you're going to sleep tonight, the burden that that puts on you on a day-to-day basis is enormous. And as we talked about before, we're not built for constant ongoing stress. We're built to live in communities where people take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And those basic survival needs are not a concern. I'm not remembering the name of the anthropologist right now.
No, Maslow?
It was Margaret Murray.
Margaret Mead.
Who, when asked, what do you consider the first indication of civilization in the fossil record? She said, well, we found a femur that had been broken and healed in an elderly woman. And this, there's no possible way that a person with that break could function. Somebody took care of that person and made sure that they had food until their leg healed up. And that was a very early fossil. You know, it was a Neanderthal fossil. It wasn't a human fossil.
We have pre-Homo skulls of toothless individuals. Right. And that's the same idea. There's that individual would have had to have been taken care of, that, and where they were, it had to have been, we think, toothless for several years before dying.
Yes. So someone in essence would have had to either mash or chew their food for them in order for them to survive. And then there are other examples like the trepan skulls, for example, where, you know, for whatever reason, probably because of severe headache, holes have been drilled in skulls, but they've begun to heal back, which means that someone with a very serious condition was still being sustained and supported by that social system.
Yeah.
So that's what we're accustomed to. We're accustomed to being supported and by family, by community, by society. And right now, all of that, or much of it anyway, is a little frayed. We're not particularly being taken care of by our society in relation to the COVID virus.
At least those of us in the United States. There have been some countries that have had very, very different responses than
that's
we've
true.
Had here.
I'm sorry. I used we in an incorrect way. Yeah. So it becomes a matter of just reducing the stress on us so that we can carry on. Mm-hmm. You know, keep calm and carry on, as the British sign has it. Because time does carry on and things do change. In fact, I wrote a poem about that. Yes, found it.
Okay.
So I did actually write a poem about this very thing recently, and it occurred to me that it's pertinent to what we're talking about right now. So I think I'm going to read it. It's called A Plague. It's the grit, the smoke particles, the virus particles, the particles of fear that get in your throat, make it hard to swallow. And there is so much now they want us to swallow. The grit. It's like the dust they described on the moon, the astronauts, how it got into everything and smelled like gunpowder. Yes, it will chafe. Yes, it will not move smoothly. But friends, time is lubricated. It will move, like it or not, whether or not we know it. It is moving as quickly now as ever. Your moments are guaranteed, one after another, until they end. Don't be afraid. The rain is falling somewhere, the bright sun emerging somewhere else. The plague will pass, the loneliness, all the love that awaits you is coming nonetheless.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm afraid that one of the things that helps me to get through difficult times is writing, and particularly writing poetry. So I've been doing a little more of that lately.
Mm. Well, I hope that maybe one of the silver linings out of all of this is that practice element, that if we're practicing our self-care, that we can carry that forward into the rest of our lives when some of these crises have eased.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also to model it for other people. Mm-hmm. Because now is not only a time for really good self-care practices in terms of restorative practices for ourselves, but also for boundaries. Mm-hmm. Also for self-care in the form of simply saying, I can't take that on. I'm overwhelmed. I have to not do that. Or can you help me? You know, mm-hmm. Some of the hardest words to say in the English language for a lot of us. But
that along with I was wrong.
Oh, yes. There you go. That's the other one that's terrible. So, you know, I think we can do some good for our fellow people simply by taking care of ourselves in a healthy and grounded way, and by showing that, demonstrating that to the other people around us, because people are responding in all different kinds of ways. And we're seeing that in our personal lives, we're seeing it on the news, we're seeing, you know, the world appears to have lost a wheel. Mm-hmm. But we are sane people, and we are well-intentioned, and these times will pass. And when they do, it's incumbent on us to be there, to have gotten through it. And so I wish to all of our listeners lucky breaks and good experiences that restore and feed you.
And thanks for being on this journey with us.
We're so grateful to all of our listeners. We really appreciate that you spend your time with us.
Well, thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Yucca. Pleasure talking with you as always.